I'm Dr. Ben Rall. Do you know where the most amazing doctor lives? You may be surprised to learn that it's actually right inside of you. Yet, today's healthcare model is built on a foundation that the greatest doctor instead comes in the form of pills, potions, lotions, even surgery. So listen in, because what if the majority of what you have been told about health and healing is not only wrong, but actually harmful to you? One thing is for sure. When you work with your body and not against it, you'll begin to discover that you are in fact designed to heal.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of the Designed to Heal podcast. I am your average Jeff here with Dr. Ben Rall. Buddy.
Yo.
How we doing?
All good in the hood. How are you?
I'm good, man. You know, it's interesting. We're on a mission today with this episode. You've been given marching orders.
It's true.
The boss has stepped in and said, hey, apparently you've got a good thing going on here, but I want to help you take it to a next level. I'm maybe presuming that she even said that. But
right. You know. Well, I always like to ask you a lot. I ask people, you know, hey, what do you want to hear on the show?
Yeah.
Right? And so I have my own echo chamber in my own head, so I like to, you know, it's probably left to my own devices. I would just talk about chiropractic all day long and all that. So anyway, my wife said, so I asked my wife, you know, hey, babe, any ideas for the shows? And so she sent me a few. And so the one I chose to talk about today was what she called the highs and lows of living a vitalistic life, right? Mm. The highs and lows of vitalism. And so now, without having had a full-blown conversation with her about it, what she entirely meant by that, I am making some assumptions.
We are taking some liberties apologies in advance.
What I think that she meant, you know, I am her husband, so I feel like I've lived this with her. But so I think, though, and there's probably multiple angles to it, Jeff, but I guess I would start like this. When you make, when you make the decision, for example, I'm just picking examples. You could say this about anything. When you make the decision to homeschool, pick one example, okay? And I never really thought about this early when we decided to homeschool. I wasn't homeschooled. My wife wasn't homeschooled. So this was kind of our first generation on that. Yeah. The things I thought would be difficult about homeschooling are not the things that are difficult about homeschooling.
Curious, what were the things that you thought would be difficult?
Curriculum and
figuring out what we're going to teach.
How do you do it? You know what I mean? The logistical stuff of it, right? Well, now I think one of the biggest things, and again, I've got to be careful here. my wife homeschools, I do not. So anyway, but I think one of the things is
I'm just listening.
Yeah, when you take out so much of the fluff around traditional school, just the wasted time. People agree on this, right? Just the wasted time. You have so much more bandwidth for things that there's a lot more room for I want to say this the right way. That doesn't end up being the problem. You get plenty of time to do whatever you want to do, and then some. So I think one of the things that people are always surprised by, and I know there is a lot of different ways to homeschool, but I think one of the things that people are most often surprised about most homeschooling is just how little time you actually need to get through the academic portion. I would say, now I know there are people that sit down 8 to 4, right, and stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance in their living room. I get it, right? I'm not saying that's bad. I would call that schooling at home. That's a little different.
Yeah.
But you have a different philosophy, the reason that many people try to get out of the school system is because they don't want to do the way that it's done. So just mimic that at home, I think, is what most people don't do. Right. I know there are some of you, that might be some of you listening. That's not a judgment on it. I'm just simply saying, for us, when we realize, okay, these are the academics we want to do, that we need to do to get through the thing, you know, that takes, you know, a couple few hours a day, more as they get older, no doubt about it. And we're into that season now where my daughter's load of work is becoming more significant than it ever has. There just are certain things that have to be done. So anyway, here's my point. When you say, I'm going to homeschool my kid, you're taking the entirety of education. Now, I would argue it should be this way either way, but here's been my experience on it.
Okay.
You're taking, and we saw this happen during COVID a little bit, right? Where people all of a sudden were, quote, forced to homeschool. And I think that's absolutely. Even not entirely, they were forced to watch their computer screen of their teacher at, you know, I wouldn't call that homeschool. They were watching the school they went to on a computer.
It's more of the school and at home.
Yeah. Like you said, the reason I've even put that caveat on there is because I think many people still checked out on that, right? But what happened was a lot of parents became aware of things their kids were being taught and went, what? That's crazy. So that's one of the caveats to this. Here's what I mean. When you decide to homeschool your kid, you all of a sudden realize I am in charge of their entire education model. Now, you might still choose to have tutors, or you may choose to use some online programs or take them to a co-op. Like, I don't mean it.
Right.
But I'm just saying, you're now, the first one was you just made one decision. I'm going to send them to, like when I was a kid, it was, what district are you in? You know, that's where you went to school. You walked up there, or you were like, it wasn't, not much thought was given to it. We couldn't afford a private school, so that wasn't going to be an option. So it was just like, you just go to the school. Like, mm-hmm. that was it, right?
And most didn't question that. That's just what they did.
And you just,
end of story.
Yeah. And you do what the teacher said.
Yeah.
And what's the homework? I don't know. Mm-hmm. The homework's, you know, matter of fact, when my most of my fights growing up, or if I asked my parents for help with my homework, especially my dad, like we bumped heads on that. Like, he tried to teach me math. I'm like, that's not how they taught me. And then we'd fight, and then it'd be end and a half. So I look back, most of my schooling, oh, yes, my parents were diligent about telling me to do my homework and things like that. I don't mean that.
Right.
But it was mostly up to me, right? And then, you know, if I got good grades, then life was good. I happened to be a person that got good grades. So there just wasn't a lot that went on in my life with that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, you get straight A's, good job, go home, life goes on, right? Now, so here's the
like
point.
To go even further with that, not even a lot of questions about even what you're learning.
Not at all.
I mean, if you got the grade, that's good, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even mean that like they were like ignorant or didn't care.
Right.
It was just kind of like, oh.
Well, but that's the point, I think. And I'm the same way, because I feel like, you know, that's the standard. Well, you know, it's an assumption that I guess whatever you're learning, if you're getting the grade, clearly you're doing the work and it's what everybody needs to learn and all that kind of stuff, but no thought of the how, the means, whatever. You know,
and if you can get a good enough grades, then you can maybe take enough good enough score on your SATs or ACTs, and then you'll get into a good college, and then you'll get a good career, and then your life will be magic.
Right.
It was just kind of that. Now, when you take yourself out of that train, then all of a sudden there's just a whole different weight that you can feel. And oftentimes, especially if you're maybe first generation, there's a whole different level of like, I got to really like learn a lot about a lot. I got to you know, I wasn't raised like this. Like, I've got some friends that are, you know, third, fourth generation pastors, right? So for them, it's not weird to do devotionals. It's not weird to lead their family in worship. It's not weird to pray together as a family. Yep. It's not weird to do service trips and mission trips. It's not weird to go to church 3 times a week. It's not weird for like, right? But if you're new to that, then it looks like a wild, different lifestyle. Like, this is weird. Nobody else does this, or whatever the scenario is, right?
Yeah.
So
makes sense.
How it goes into vitalism as a piece, I'm not saying homeschooling is vitalism. I was using it as a metaphor. So when you, from a health perspective, when you decide to kind of unplug from the traditional medical, train wreck, or the traditional medical perspective, you know, most people. And again, just this one I can speak more to, because it is, you know, I have got, yes, my own intimate experience, but I've got the experience of thousands of patients. When that happens and a person unplugs, you realize before I was basically just, in a sense, just whatever the doctor tells me to do, right? And if I get, quote, sick, and then it's still whatever the doctor tells me to do, whatever's covered by insurance, whatever hospital I'm supposed to go to, whatever, you know, doctor I see, right? Which oftentimes was just covered, you know, it's by the name on your insurance card that is covered, right? So you really haven't thought a lot about it, right? And it's usually almost, Jeff, to some degree, the same as the homeschool, where it's like, I don't know what they do. They're smarter than me. That's what they do for a living. They're teachers. They went to school for this. Blah, blah, blah. The education model. I don't know, right? Some version of just like...
But it's funny you say that about the doctor. I mean, this should make perfect sense to the listener, because, you know, the average person these days who goes by the traditional model looks up their, you know, insurance website or something like that, looks for a doctor, right? I mean, sometimes you might get a recommendation. Every so often, oh, I have this great doctor. Yeah, you look them up, they're not in your plan, right? Well, I guess I gotta go to the other guy,
Or they're too far away,
whatever. So you go down the list, and then you end up going, I don't even know who these people are. I'm going to call them up. And usually the criteria is, are they accepting new patients? I guess that's where I'm going, right? Think about that. I mean, when I think about it that way, and that you've presented it that way, Ben, that's crazy to me.
Yeah. Well, so
I consider how different you are than other people, and even how even among doctors, there's some major differences.
Well, and then think about how often that conversation goes. You call them, and if they are accepting new patients,
and
then let's say they aren't, or whatever. They say, we can get you appointment, but it's in 4 or 5 months, right? 6 months. And they say, but hey,
that's not an exaggeration, by the way.
Hey, we got so and so, which is somebody you don't even know about, you never talked, but it's somebody else there, but I can get you in there next week. So all this pretend kind of trying that you did still ended up with you just doing somebody you don't know. You have no idea if you have the same values of them. You have no idea of their approach.
The trying was only about schedule. That's the point.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Well, schedule and money.
Fair.
Right?
That's right.
Well, they cover. Because they're a great doctor, but they're out of pocket. I ain't going.
I'm not
going
to spend $300 out of pocket.
No, I think that's insane. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Know, but that's how most people will make their healthcare decision, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So from a vitalistic standpoint, when you start to when you start to pull out of that, now, just like homeschool, when you pull out of that, you now have, you open yourself up to almost scrutiny from everybody because you're now doing something different. You're going, you're, and it's some version of this, Jeff, whether it's articulated like this all the time, it's probably not, but it's something where it's like, what? Do you think you know better? What? Do you think you're smarter than the doctor? Do you think, right? Some version of this.
Yep.
So you could, so I think a lot of people, there's this, there's this body of people in the middle. Matter of fact, there's actually a little bit of research on this. They estimate that that chunk is about 40 to 60%. On either end, let's just call it 60. Okay. So on either end, you got 20% on the either end that are going to be, they're going to be full allopathic medical model no matter what happens, right? They're going down with the ship. They're going to get 800 booster shots, whatever the doctor says they're doing, right? And then some. And then on the other side, maybe on the other end, you got the people that, you know, my head could be laying on the other side of the street, my, you know, whatever. I'm never taking a drug, right? So, but you got this body of people in the middle. Let's call it 60%. And I think a lot of those people don't want to, they might have decisions, things in their heart or their head that say, man, I really do have a lot of challenges with the way that school is done. But if I tell my mom and dad I'm homeschooling, they're going to think I'm crazy. If I have to adjust my lifestyle because one of us has to stay home to do this, man, I don't know if I want to do that sacrifice. Often that word is used like that. Or in the healthcare model, it's like, if I'm going to stop going to the pediatrician, or I'm going to stop going to XYZ doctor, I'm going to find a naturopath, or I'm going to find a chiropractor, or I'm going to doctor myself, whatever, any version of that, I'm supportive of it all. Is you're going to start to say, like, oh, so now all of a sudden you've entered yourself into it. You're a conspiracy theorist. You're a this, you're a that, you're a crazy person. And so I think a lot of people just don't want to put up with it.
True.
So one of two things either happen. They just go along with it and they don't like it. Or they actually lie. And they actually just are chameleons. And they sit there and they nod their head with their friend that's getting the shot and they go, oh, yeah, well, you know, right? But then they don't do it. They don't ever speak up. They don't ever say anything against it. Or they're doing some kind of hybrid version that they don't really feel comfortable about. And they're too afraid to, you know, go the other way. And so I'm kind of, I guess, some level speaking to the people in the middle today and saying as we talk through this, which is I don't want to make the impression that living a holistic life or a vitalistic life or natural, more of a natural approach, a natural worldview is any easier than the other. Matter of fact, I might say it's even harder. The reason, because of the cultural pressure that you feel by defending your position. The irony of that is if you go along with what everybody else is doing, nobody gives you a hard time. Right? They're like, oh, yeah, well, you're doing what everybody else is doing. That's what we do. But the minute you start to have a position of your own, the minute you start to actually, you know, use the brain that God gave you, the minute you start to act critically, think critically, ask questions, like we talked about one of our previous guests, be a questioner. Asking questions has been seen as you're some sort of heretic, right? You're some sort of horrible human being that says, just a second, before you do that, any side effects? Can I see a study? Any of these things, right? But because of that—
How dare you?
I not only kind of laugh about it, but I think it stops a lot of people from doing it because they're too afraid of that pressure.
But to that point, it's funny, even coming out of my mouth, I should have corrected it because, I do laugh at that now, but there was a time, right, where absolutely in the same boat. Right. I can't do this. I can't whatever. Now I look at it on the other side and I go, that's so ridiculous that I can't. But I don't say that with any degree of judgment or lack of compassion for somebody that's in that, you know, that early stage. You know,
Meg and I had made a decision early on. You made me think of something when you said that. Meg and I made a decision early on that we were not going to let somebody else's, I'm going to say this, try to say this the right way. We were not going to become liars because somebody else disagreed with what we were going to do.
Okay.
Right? So, for example, this could show up in a subtle way, Jeff. Somebody calls you up and invites you to something you don't really want to go. So you could lie, right, and say, well, nope, I'm got doobity doob to do, right? You could.
But by the way, those who are on Facebook, I'm not, but who click maybe to an event,
okay.
To me, it's the same thing.
Is that a thing? Okay.
I'm just going to say it's the same thing.
Is that really an option?
Oh my gosh. Okay. You didn't know about that?
No, I didn't know about that.
Do you not know about it? It's complicated too. No. Like relationship status, never. You can click it's complicated.
No, never seen or heard any of that. Well, there you go.
One of the many reasons that I'm off Facebook. But yeah, if you're doing that, if you click maybe to that event, you're what Ben's talking about right here.
So it was difficult because it made some rough conversations, right?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody said, hey, you know, whatever, or if somebody, you know, we know, for example, certain people that have concerns, you know, they don't like that we're not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to lie and say that I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to, you know, make some story around why we choose to do that or not do that,
mm-hmm.
right? I just state, because the irony is, you know, if you will, quote, the air quotes, other side feels fully available to say whatever the hell they want about it.
True,
right?
Absolutely.
They're going to run their mouth about how ridiculous they think not being, you know, by homeschooling is. They're going to run their mouth about this. They're going to run their mouth about this.
Yep.
So I simply say what we owed to ourselves from an integrity standpoint
mm-hmm.
was to absolutely, confidently, if asked, you know, really, most of the time, to defend our position, right?
Okay.
Why
sense.
Do you homeschool? What I don't say is, oh, you know, it works for us, you know. No, I'll tell you absolutely why I homeschool.
Hmm.
When you ask me why I didn't get the vaccine, well, you know, we just didn't. I'll tell you exactly why I didn't get the vaccine. And I believe that's important. But a lot of people, even though we might make that stand privately, we don't voice it.
Hmm.
And so we're still living this little, like, secret undercover lie that we really don't want anybody to think any differently about us,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which I think just leads to a larger incongruency later, because as that relationship develops, then people are like, what the flip, dude?
Hmm. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
Tell me, as you have chosen, and I'm going to just use the word authenticity, okay?
Yeah.
As you and Meg have chosen authenticity, what benefit has that afforded you? And I'm not saying good, you say, hey, what's in it for me kind of thing. What would you say that has, what purpose has that served?
Yeah.
You know, later on that you've seen, what net results
have
you seen?
It's a great question, Jeff. And I'll say this, now that my kids are older, I finally, one area that's been surprising fruit, because it wasn't why we did it, but I've seen my children have confidence in their decisions.
Okay.
I've seen my children be able to articulate why and why they don't choose to participate in certain things and not feel like they're bad because they have that position. I'm very thankful that my kids are very assertive and able to communicate that, and they stand up for what they believe in. And I don't mean that in an argumentative way.
No, I got you.
I just simply mean, I'll give you an example. My daughter was in a camp over the last couple of weeks, and it was kind of a high-end kind of fancy acting camp, and she gets back from her first day, and I said, how was it? She goes, well, you know, it was good. She goes, Dad, the first thing we did for an hour was we cleared the bad energy out of the room, right? Now,
wait, what is that?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I'm with you, right? So
no, I'm serious. What does that mean?
You stole my look, right?
Okay.
You know? So, but here's my point. Talking to Grace about that, having her share her thoughts, her position being somewhat similar to yours, which is, it didn't make sense to me. What does that mean? I didn't understand, you know, right? And talking about that.
Yeah, and I'm not knocking about it. Like, I just don't
versus,
know. I'm just asking.
Versus,
you know? Like,
if I just go along with everybody says all the time and don't engage my brain, I don't know, I'm at this fancy camp, and that's what you're supposed to do if you're a fancy actor. You just clear the bad energy. So you move your arms around like this, and you go around the room for an hour. I guess that's what you do.
Okay.
See, but we don't think about that, because our kiddos are going to be in these positions where they're going to be told different things by different people. I vehemently want my children to be able to think for themselves.
So
by them watching their mom and dad navigate this for the 12 and 15 years of their life, watch the conversations, watch us stand up for why we do certain things in a confident way and articulate our position, my kids have realized, you know what? They don't have to be afraid. They don't have to feel dumb about it. They don't have to feel like they're second-class citizens. They don't have to hide it. They don't have to, if somebody tells you you're homeschooled, just don't tell them. If somebody tells you, I see they're vaxxed, don't tell them you're not vaxxed, because if you tell them you're not vaxxed, they might call the police. No, my kids are loud and proud about not being vaxxed. Loud and proud. Thank God. Everybody else is wearing a freaking Band-Aid to tell how great it is that they're jabbed and make you feel like you're a second-class citizen because you're not jabbed. So my kids can absolutely say, I'm not jabbed, and I can tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
So the point in that is that was one side. Here's the other thing, benefits that I've seen is people know our position. So it helps to, that was a learning curve there, right? Especially as a lot of these things were things that we changed kind of our position on, right? As we came into being that. So people, like, you know, for a while they were confused. Then it was like, oh, they're pretty serious about this, right? And again, these have created some pretty tense situations in our families and friends. And so, but now they know where we stand, mm-hmm. right? So I'm a person of faith. So people will oftentimes in conversation, they'll say something like, well, Ben, I probably know how you feel about this, right? Or some of them have been great times, right? I've been asked to do funerals, or if somebody's really struggling, they want me to talk to them, or they know if things get really hard, that's going to be my approach to them, or I get asked to pray for people, or I get asked, right, because they know where I stand on it.
Yeah.
Or if they have really big questions on it, or they're really confused about it, they'll say, hey, Ben, you seem to... One of my greatest joys in my life was the fact that I was able to help my dad, my biological father, come into relationship with Christ. And he asked me to go out to coffee with him one day, and we're sitting at Starbucks, and we're just sitting there. It's early morning. We're both early morning guys. And his question to me was, I want what you have. Explain it to me, Ben. Hmm. You're sitting across from your 55-year-old dad, right, who's asking you, like, explain to me what happened to you. I want that, right? The greatest honor of my life. A high pressure, meaning you want to do it well, right? He's asking a very serious question. And then I was able to be part of his life when he surrendered his life to Christ, and I was there with him. I didn't lead that to him, but we were there at a situation that it took place. So here's my point: by being okay with being known what you stand for, mm-hmm. it allows a lot of people to ask you a lot of stuff, and mm-hmm. you can be encouraging for people. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think this would be like
so that's part, high, by the way.
Yeah, okay. And then I think part three, mm-hmm. yeah, it is. It's high for me. I enjoy that, so it doesn't mm-hmm. stress me out. It could stress other people.
Well, let's correct it then. Yeah. It's got its lows in that it's going to, I mean, let's be honest, Ben. I mean, to go to that place sometimes for people, you're going to deal with controversy. You're going to deal with criticism, but it's going to be lonely too at times.
Oh, yeah. I would say most of the time. Like I would say, we just had this conversation with ourselves this weekend, mm-hmm. which is, you know, in many ways, we live a very... you know, and I don't talk about this a lot on this show, but like in many ways, we live a relatively lonely life because when you do put yourself out there, either a lot of people don't want to be associated with you,
right?
Or you know, they just it's just too much.
Well, they don't know what to do with you.
Yeah,
right.
They don't
come down to you sometimes.
Yeah,
and it's easier sometimes for them to just maybe do otherwise.
Ask them, but I don't know for sure, right? But I've something like that probably, right, Jeff.
Sure.
So, and then the last one would be and this is just my experience in this, and it's probably partly because of my job, my career as a chiropractor, is it also, I think, helps other people be courageous on things that they already wanted to be courageous on, right? So a person that's already saying, hey, yeah, that didn't make sense to me, but I needed to see it done, or I needed to know it was okay to do mm-hmm. it. Maybe this is a better way of saying it. It gives people permission to think and do the things that they probably were already naturally thinking. Like, yeah, I was never okay with that jab going into my child, mm-hmm. but I thought I was crazy because they made me think I was crazy. Mm-hmm. But then talking to you, you know, like it happened to me the other day. I was having a conversation with somebody that was severely injured by a medication and almost killed him. And he was asking me, he's trying to get well, and it was a phone consult. And he said, hey, can I ask you something? I said, sure. He goes, how do you feel about the COVID jab? I said, how do I feel about the COVID jab? I think it's the craziest thing we've ever done. You know, I went off for a minute, and he goes, okay, thank goodness. I just want to know where you were at before. Like a lot of people, happens to me a lot of times with new patients, right? They come in the office and they'll be like, hey, like, where are you at with this stuff? I'm like, hey, man, you're safe here, right? And it's like you just see their shoulders fall, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. They're just like stress comes off of them because they realize they can just, you know, in this instance. Now, again, that same thing, Jeff, for other people's perspective is going to drive them crazy, right? Like, there's other people that hate the fact that I haven't had a jab. You know what I mean, mm-hmm. right? So almost in that same question, Jeff, there's the high and low right there in the same one, right?
Yep.
You're going to have definitely a tribe of people that you're going to meet, and then you're going to also have a lot of people that hate you. And by the way, those extremes, like I said about those two groups, and that's a real kind of number, mm-hmm. you know, those outliers on either end. So when you're in that already small group, and then you kind of are alienated, if you live in that body in the middle that just kind of goes along with it, you got a lot more people that you can play with in the sandbox, mm-hmm. right? Because we all just pretend like we're going along with it, even if we're not. Yeah, okay, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But nothing's really happening there, right?
But something powerful happens when you've got somebody that breaks the ice. That's essentially what you're talking about. You know, like you've given permission for people to, you know, to know that, hey, it's okay to think the way that I'm thinking. And I actually think that there are some people that are more gifted at this than others and called to do this more than others. Yeah. Like we call them leaders. Okay. Sure. Now everybody can be a leader in their own different way, but I think that there are some, you know, like you that have that particular calling on your life, that if you were not to obey that, you wouldn't be able to sleep at night.
So I mean, very right. real, Jeff. Like, mm-hmm. it's a very real thing to me. Like, I've reluctantly come into what you just said mm-hmm. In my own life because I don't really want that mantle. I don't really want that pressure, if you will, right? And I resisted it for a long time.
Right, yeah.
And then even there was seasons in my life where, I mean, there was a season where I was out of chiropractic, mm-hmm. right? I was doing some other things. And my wife would tell you this, you know, when I got out of that space and I wasn't engaging on a daily basis with people and patients, mm-hmm. I was still doing work in wellness, right? I was helping building clinics and I was doing some other stuff. But one of my gifts, if you will, I don't like to talk about that, but is directly with people that are either scared or people that have never thought about that, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not one of the worst seasons of my life was when I coached other doctors, right? That was my job. And I was like, this isn't for me. Like, my job is not to try to, you know, there's people that have that gift, right? Some of them are my friends.
Yep.
So I'm like, man, God bless you. Not for me, right? And you joke about your name, you know, Average Jeff, and I don't like that term because we're all, you know what I mean? I know why you say it, right? But I mean, I feel like that's my role is for the average person,
yeah.
and not in a derogatory way. It's like, you know, people still can't handle it in my office. I still call a lot of patients doctor. I call them doctor, mm-hmm. Dr. Jeff, Dr. Mm-hmm. Bob, Dr. Mm-hmm. Bill, Dr. Lisa. And it's like, there's some people that just can't handle that. They're like, that same guy that was asking me about the drugs and the stuff, he goes, what do I call you? I'm like, dude, I don't care. But people are not used to that level of mm-hmm. of not caring about that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so, but I do that purposefully. Like, it's meaning, like, I mean, yes, I don't need it for my ego, but I also do it, like, I want them to not feel it's this mystery, not to feel like they can't get in the game. I want them to feel empowered. And the first thing we have to do is separate some sort of hierarchy mm-hmm. of, you know, because mm-hmm. I have a couple more years of schooling in a particular area that I somehow mm-hmm. am the keeper of all things truth health related, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and then because you're just going to spend your whole life looking for this guru that's going to know it all. I'm like, dude, nobody knows you better than you. Mm-hmm. Stop this. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Nobody, the best pediatrician in the world is the mom and the dad. So, well, what about this? Listen, if it comes to that point, you'll find some help. It's okay. Like, don't worry about it. But that's not where 99.9% of the people live. So, mm-hmm. you know, so I would say partly to your question there, Jeff, mm-hmm. about, you know, the you know, when you do that, when you put yourself out there, now I'll also say this. So I'm also thinking, you know, the different times my kiddos have whatever gotten sick or had a bad day or probably had those moments. I wouldn't say a lot, but I would say I have had those moments where I've laid in my bed and, you know, just doubted yourself, doubted your approach. You know, am I doing the right thing? Mm-hmm. Am I messing my kids up? Am I doing this for the wrong reasons? Am I an idiot? You know, actually, I probably do that a lot more than I now that I think about that.
Ben, if there's a person out there listening who has never done that,
yeah.
I got to think they're not being honest with themselves.
Well, don't you do that no matter what choice you make? Like, I think you're doing that whether you lay in, whether you're following the traditional medical model
always.
Or you're not. You know what I mean? Like, I think we all are.
Right. And to me, I look at that, and that's where I look at, like, you know, some talk about, like, faith over fear. I talk about faith over feeling a lot of times because the reality is like, we feel, those are real human emotions. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, faith is that thing that exercises. Faith is that part of you that says, I'm not going to let that doubt that voice of doubt have license to operate in my life. Like, I'm going to take dominance over that voice, tell it to shut up and go with what I know.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes it's people like you that are having these conversations that's the inward dilemma that most people, that the guy was having with you on the phone the other mm-hmm. day. There is a part of him that knows that he knows that he knows this is wrong.
Yeah.
Right. But he's also got this part, this call it his conscious brain or whatever, that's hearing constantly that he's the crazy one.
Right.
He's the outlier.
Exactly.
He's the weirdo and everything, mm-hmm. right? And there's this inward struggle of tension that goes back and forth. And the question is like, what's the dominance? You know, you've ever heard that it's the old, like a Native American proverb, and it talks about like the wrestling of good versus evil.
Okay.
And it's like
the one which one you feed.
Yeah. Which one wins? Like good versus evil. Well, it's the one you feed. And they use dogs. They represent like one dog is evil or one wolf or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the question right there. You know, like which one do you feed? right?
Yeah, like
left in a place of isolation and loneliness, mm-hmm. I think it becomes a whole lot easier mm-hmm. to obey feeling. It becomes a whole lot easier to obey doubt and everything. You know,
well, people are already lonely. People are already afraid. People are already scared. So when you just submit to some outside authority,
right.
It relieves. It feels like it relieves some of that, but it's a temporary fix.
It's a temporary
fix. And you also at some point realize, man, I just gave in to something I really didn't even agree with. I was thinking,
is like the worst too, because you think about that, like inwardly, like that's when you're like you're not your authentic self. Like you know inside, nobody likes a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I understand there are people that maybe, you know, have become one so long or have been one so long that they've lost any sense of conviction on that. But the average person, like, we don't like that feeling inside. Right. With that, the person that I present or I claim to be does not match who I am inside.
Exactly.
That's an agony mm-hmm. inside there, right? That's an agony. And so
that's really true, Jeff. You know I think that goes. Actually, you kind of give me a point four earlier when you asked the pros and the cons, or the however you said that, the highs. Like, I'm not perfect, and there would be people that probably know me that would, or have known me in the past even, that would say I am a hypocrite in certain areas of my life. And so I don't say this to say I have it figured out, but I would say attempting to live congruently on my beliefs is a very freeing place to live.
Absolutely.
Right. So, like, again, there's people that you know, that know me and that I love and that I care about, and friends and family that know I love Jesus, and they don't, they could care less about that, but we are still great friends, right? Like, but I don't have to shy away from my faith about that. I don't have to shy away from that. They're not surprised to learn that, and they're not surprised to do it. So the same thing would be on these different positions. And so I think that it is really an important thing, because a lot, like you said, Jeff, that thing that people are feeling inside, that like that disc, that knot in their stomach, or that you know, right,
a it's lot real, of man, that yeah. struggle is real.
And once you just kind of like, you know, come out about it, right, a lot of that resolves. Now there's a season of like what, you know, and all that, but once that's over, people know who you are, why you are, why you know, and it there's a lot of freedom. I'd say the worst part is the other side, right? Trying to hide it, trying to, you know, camouflage it to kind of blend in. And it's like, there's a lot of freedom in just saying, hey, this is where I stand. Now, the other thing I would say about kind of just, you know, living a vitalistic life is you're under a microscope. Right. I would say there's an old, I think it was Don Shula or one of those guys, old football coach. And he said, you know, or who is the old Notre Dame coach? Lou Holtz.
Uh-huh.
I think one of them said, like, just know that most people are cheering for you to fail. Right. Most people are rooting against you. People don't like to see you successful. And define success however you want. I don't mean like, you know, money in your bank or whatever. That's fine. I don't care. Like, whatever success is to you, realize that most people don't want that. So, you know, when you put yourself out there, right, people love to knock you down. People love to talk smack on you.
Yeah.
People love to point out your error of your ways. People love to show your mistakes. People love to point out when you're a hypocrite. And all those things are real and fine. Some people can't handle that. So then their way of avoiding that is just not doing it, right? But what's the old, I've seen that shirt before, something about women. Well-behaving women rarely change history. Some quote like that, you know.
I've seen
what
that
I mean?
Before.
Something like that.
That's good.
Yeah, you know, but the point is, like, if you're out to make a difference in your own, and again, I say make a difference, I don't even mean, like, to change the world. I mean your family. Your own immediate experiences, you know, maybe people that you work with. I mean, we all have some level of influence that we're put, you know, relationship that we're in with people. So I would just encourage you, if you're doing that, like, Jeff, you know, when it talks about, you know, count the costs. So the reason I think I wanted to do this show, or that my wife, and when she said it, it kind of resonated with me, because I think there's a lot of people that they never start because they were too afraid. And then they didn't know what was on the other side of that fear. And so they stayed where they didn't want to be their whole life. I've studied over the years, or heard, I should say studied, but I've read a lot of books on, like, near-death experiences, or people that have claimed to have died and come back, that kind of stuff, right? And they're fascinating. Fascinating stories. One of the commonalities that you'll see, and I've read a lot about this, one of the common things you'll see is that people oftentimes are very different after they've had that experience. They now aren't afraid of so much about what people think. Now they're not afraid. They finally, a lot of times you'll see a career change, or you'll see a demeanor change. I wouldn't call it a near-death experience. I should have died, but I didn't die. But my we had gone off of a, my mom, and I was 21 years old, and I was driving in South Dakota. If you've ever lived in the Midwest, you know the term black ice. It literally means where the road looks like you can't tell. It's just mm-hmm. a sheet of ice. Mm-hmm. And my mom was driving, and we was early in the morning. She was taking me to the airport. And we're in the middle of nowhere in the Midwest, and we came around a corner, but going about 80 miles an hour, and we just went off the road, and I didn't have my seatbelt on, and we were you know, it was wintertime, and so obviously with the ice, and so we go off the road. I mean, going 80 miles an hour, go into the ditch, and the way this ditch was sit, it had like a, you know, it was a ditch, so when we hit it kind of sideways, and then we just flipped like countless times, who knows how many times, I don't know, 12 times. We ended up like so far in the cornfield you couldn't even see the car. So like from the road. So however, and now I was unconscious. I don't know. When I came to, we were upside down, and I'm in the back. It was kind of like a small SUV kind of a thing. I was in the back, upside down. The car was kind of crushed on top of us. All I could see was my mom's hair. I thought she was dead. She wasn't moving. You know, I had gotten cut up a little bit. I was bleeding. My shoes got knocked off. Couldn't find anything. This is 22 years ago. So like there wasn't a phone. I didn't know what to do. I get around. I see my mom's face. She's in the process. She's kind of suffocating because the car is so tight around her. She can't breathe and she can't even talk to me. Her eyes are as big as saucers. And I didn't know what to do. And so I just remember, I don't even know how I got out of the car, kicked out or got out somehow. And my shoes were knocked off, and it's 4 a.m. It's dark. And I just said, Mom, hey, this might kill you. I don't know what else to do, but I'm going to take you out of this car. If I leave you in here, you're going to die. So I got to get you out of here. So I just ripped her out of the car somehow, and I got her out. And she started just saying all these things she wanted to tell me, like, tell this person this, tell this person goodbye, tell this person this. And I just remember being so upset at her, like, don't talk like that. You know, like, you're going to be fine. And wow. And so I had a little cut on my head, and I had a cut on my back. And then I ended up racing down to running through the field. And I said, Mom, I got to leave you here because I got to go find somebody to get help. Nobody saw us go off. They don't know we're in the middle of nowhere. So I go there and I running through the ditches of the snow, trying to get cars to stop. Well, it's so icy. I mean, there I'm causing accidents, you know, by trying to get people to stop.
Yeah.
Somebody finally stops. I literally was a kid in a Trans Am, and I pulled him out of his window. Like, he rolled his window down. I'm covered in blood running down my face. He must have thought I had killed somebody or didn't know what happened. I just pulled him out of his window. I was like, you got to help me. You know, my mom, you know, we got in a car accident. And so ambulance came and all that stuff. And I remember realized, as a matter of fact, next day we went back to the crusher to get, because my luggage was in there because I was flying back to where I lived at the time. And I remember picking up the luggage, and the guy said, oh man, I'm so sorry for your loss, because he's assumed it was everything. That car was dead.
No way. Yeah.
And and so I say all that to say, Jeff, that was a moment in my life, even though I was in a very different time of my life and living very differently, and certainly chiropractic wasn't part of my life. You know, faith wasn't necessarily part of my life. But I remember when we were going off the road, and I didn't have my seatbelt on, and they talk about like your life kind of flashes before your eyes. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, man, I remember almost being like not a smile, because that would be a stretch, mm-hmm. but I remember being like, I can't believe this is how my life ends. Like, I just remember thinking like, how crazy. I just die in a cornfield at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, I kind of thought I would be, you know, you'd live a little bit, you'd maybe, you know, get married, have some kids, you know, live a little bit of life.
Gosh.
I guess it just ends like this.
Yep.
Out in a cornfield. Okay. Like, all right, this is, I wouldn't have picked this one, but I guess what an anticlimactic way to go. Well, maybe a little blaze of glory, but just no fanfare, just middle of the field, car rolls over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dead. People come to my funeral, long gone. You wouldn't even be thinking about me anymore. Mm. And so I say that to say I've had to realize I very much have thought many times about my mortality, and realized that based on that experience, and I've had others, unfortunately, but based on that experience, I should be dead.
Mm.
I should have been dead.
Mm.
Should have been thrown from that car. Should have been rolled over by that car. Should have been crushed. I should have been whatever. The fact that I walked away with essentially a scratch on my back and a scratch on my head is unbelievable.
Hmm.
So when I realized that, Jeff, I know some other people had very extreme life stories, but I would tell you that that gave me some freedom, right? That I'm on borrowed time. I don't know when my number's getting called. I don't live... I know what you said, faith over fear, mm-hmm. right? Faith over feelings. I tend to like the faith over fear. Maybe mm-hmm. that's because that's an overriding mm-hmm. feeling a lot. Mm-hmm. But I don't I try not to live a life by fear because mm-hmm. I could be dead tomorrow. Any of mm-hmm. us could be. Mm-hmm. So when I think about, back to this idea about vitalism, when people say, I think it's crazy how you live, I say, okay, I don't know what to tell you. Sorry. I don't know. I'm not going to change for that. So I'm sorry you disagree with the fact I didn't get a jab. I'm sorry you disagree that I homeschool my kids. I'm sorry you disagree that I get adjusted regularly. I'm sorry you disagree that I don't take drugs as my approach to healthcare. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't know what, I'm sorry that I love Jesus. I'm not sorry about any of those things. I'm just, my point being like, as a matter of fact, I should say it the other way. I don't apologize for those things. Mm. Okay. Mm. It's okay. Right.
Yep.
I could be dead.
Yep.
All right. I wouldn't be married. I wouldn't have my kiddos. Like all this to me is extra gravy that I don't deserve anyways. Mm. So I don't live my life in fear. I don't worry about what other people say about me. Is there times where it breaks my heart? Is there times where, especially with people you love and care about, right? Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, you know, like, whatever, dude. We get a little brief stint at this, you know?
Yeah.
I got my family. I got my, you know, my kiddos. I got my practice members. I got my faith. And at the end of the day, like I'm 43 years old. I've had more life than I ever thought I'd have. Mm. I'm thankful for that. And so if my, and I don't love this word, but if my, I don't even want to say this, but if what people would see as being courageous, or if what people see as being brave or some version of that word, if it helps them to identify with that and do that themselves, then I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
What I wouldn't want to do is they can't just hang on to that forever. It has to become their own. But what my children watching their dad be brave and stand up against BS and stand up for truth and stand up for what he believes in. Now, I don't know what my kiddos will decide to do, but they've watched that happen in their life since mm-hmm. before that they were born. Mm-hmm. They know that it's okay to have a position and assertion and use their brains. Mm-hmm. They don't have to apologize for it. They don't have to be mean. They don't have to be rude about it, but they also don't have to apologize for that. Mm-hmm. And so helping those people. Now, like you said, Jeff, that's just my little domain mm-hmm. of a gifting. Mm-hmm. Okay. I assure you, if you're listening to this, you have one too. Mm-hmm. It just might be different, might be the same. You've got a gifting and all sorts of, mothers have a gift a lot of times. It's amazing to watch them. I remember thinking about Megan, like I remember when my kids were born, like, you know, mom can like hold like a kid on their hip for like 5 hours. And I mean, I would like hold one of the kids for like,
among many talents,
yeah,
by the way.
Let's I just remember like I would see Megan do that and I'd be like, oh yeah, sure, I'll hold Grace. And then like I'm like switching hips 9 times, trying to like put them on your back, hold them for a second. And Meg's like standing there all day long. Or we flew one time internationally, it was like 19 hours on the flight, and Jack just laid on her lap the entire way. And I remember when we got up, she was like soaked, like swimming pool soaked, right? Just the body heat thing. And I just was like, man, women and moms are like amazing, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. next level amazing. Mm-hmm. I just, when I think about the fortitude that they have and the endurance that and the resilience that they have in that it was really amazing to me. So I know this show kind of took a turn, Jeff, as far as I wasn't planning on sharing a near-death experience story that I've had, but but as I was thinking about that, there's probably some truth to the fact that when you've gone through something like that, which a lot of people have, maybe, I hope not, but if you have, it does free you up because it's like, listen, I shouldn't even be here anyway. So I'm really not worried. Like the alternative was I could be dead. Should be dead. I'm not dead. So if that means I can go fight for some people today, speak some truth that encourages other people, use the brain God gave me, be a blessing to people, hopefully if I can, maybe encourage some people, maybe tough love on a couple people here and then, be a dad that mm-hmm. fights for people. I remember the book mm-hmm. I read one time called Wild at Heart. You probably read it, John mm-hmm. Eldridge.
Yeah.
Old book, older now, but.
Yeah, 20 years, you know, I guess.
But he's about being a man. Right? About stepping up, yeah. Right? You know, and I'm all about being a man. Mm-hmm. I'm all about being a dude, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I don't mean that against the women. I just mean, that's my job. Be a dude.
Mm-hmm.
Bust it out.
Mm-hmm.
Fight, contend, whatever we do, kill things, you know? bring home the mountain lion or whatever we do, you know, whatever. I'm probably actually embarrassing myself here. But the point is, if you're listening to this, I actually don't know what the point is. If you're listening to this, right, let it hopefully challenge you. If you're in that, if you're on that 20%, I'm not worried about it. If you're on the other 20% on the other end, you're not going to listen to me anyway. So if you're that chunk in the middle,
yeah,
40 to 60% that says, man, you know what? There's something in there that I resonate with, right? I know there's something. I know there's a different way. I know I need to, I need to stand up for my family. Mm-hmm. I know I need to defend my choices. I know I need to dive into the call that God has on my life. Whatever it is for you, I don't know. Take that first step, right? Take that first step. Look different for everybody. Mm-hmm. Take that first step. Mm-hmm. Pull your kids out of school. You decide to homeschool. Have a conversation with your spouse about the next vaccine because you feel like you're done doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, fire your pediatrician if you're not into that anymore. I don't, again, I'm talking health today, but it could be anything. And mm-hmm. you start a different career. Mm-hmm. Go back to school. Mm-hmm. Start going to a church. Quit going to the church you're going. To me, that's the endless. I don't know what that mm-hmm. looks. Change your mm-hmm. nutrition. Start exercising. Stop smoking. I don't know. Negative self-talk to yourself. I don't know what it, you know, start praying. I don't know what this looks like for you. I just say, get in the game. Mm. Stop letting the culture around you mm-hmm. affect you so much that you've literally stopped thinking about for yourself. You're way more worried about what they think about you than simply just being mm-hmm. who God called you to be. Because metaphorically or not, we could all roll off the road today, and then what? They'll talk about you for a couple days at your funeral, right? I don't know who will talk at my funeral. They'll be like, "Whew, yeah, got that guy gone." But then it's over.
You'll still be a saint at your funeral. Everybody gets that luxury at their funeral.
What right? do they get?
Everybody's a saint at their funeral. You'll still be a saint. Okay.
Well, so I don't plan to die anytime soon.
People may show up just to make sure it happened, but you know that's it. But yeah, you'll still be the saint.
It'll probably be more of a roast than it will be anything else. But I hope that there is some encouragement. I'll dedicate this show to my beautiful wife, and she'll be like, "Well, that was a dumb show to dedicate to me." But but I would say this. Maybe this is what I'll say in closing.
Yeah.
I'll probably get choked up. It'd be really hard to do it without my wife. A lot of people will say things like, maybe you've even said, like when you just said earlier, like, "Oh, you know, you speak out," that kind of thing. I would tell you I do, but having my wife's, there was a time years ago where I almost got out of chiropractic because I was failing. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And I was really struggling. I was breaking down and literally breaking down and crying. And I just felt terrible. I felt terrible about myself and people that I was failing, and we were going bankrupt and everything. And I just remember my wife, you know, that day and the things that she said to me and the impact that they had on me, that I wouldn't, and like the old saying, there's behind every guy or man, mm-hmm. there's a great man, there's a greater woman. Like those all ring mm-hmm. true in my life. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for my wife, mm-hmm. there's no way. Mm. There's no way. And having her kind of in my corner, mm-hmm. even on the ugly days and the bad days and the days where it's coming down, the days where everybody thinks you're a loser and the days, and I hope I'm that her rock for her. She knows I have her back. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to do without that. Mm-hmm. So I have empathy if you're listening to this and you're like, "Man, but my spouse is on the opposite page," or "I'm a single mom," or "I'm a single dad." Like, let me be clear. I'm not making light of these, and I am not saying that they are easy. Matter of fact, it's what I tried to articulate early on in this show, which is going against the grain mm-hmm. is not easy. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, just thinking about swimming upstream, it's a lot harder than just floating with the current.
Absolutely.
So it can be exhausting. It can be overwhelming. It can be scary. It can be costly. I would simply tell you, if that's what you feel you're supposed to do, it's worth it.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to support the show, give us a 5-star review and share it with your tribe. To learn more about Dr. Ben's work, visit AchieveWellness.clinic.